Hey, everybody, and welcome back for another episode of The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by CCG Poker Radio and Paramount Social Club. Paramount's jamming right now.
Beautiful Houston, Texas.
Not like right now it's not jamming because it's Tuesday afternoon and they're not open. Sure. But like in general, dude, cash games are sick.
Good.
They've been streaming a 2-5 game, which really plays like 5-10 on the Fridays. Which is dope. Part of the reason why we got to episode 45. Brandon, tell us about episode 45 and what we're going to talk about today. Unless you got anything else to talk about. Like, we were going to do like this Jordan thing because it was like episode 45 and you were like, I wish we could do something with a shot. It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll use that for like the graphic. Ooh, that's good. I could do that.
That's what I said. I wish we were doing graphics.
I was very confused as to how we were going to talk about that and make like an audio kind of medium, but that's just not going to happen.
No. We're going to talk about taking a shot today, guys.
Taking a shot.
Shot.
When did that song come out?
I want to say 2010.
No, it's impossible. I was 30. I was doing that song well before I turned 30, I think. I don't know. Sad times for Ken to remember that.
Why don't you look it up? I'll look it up.
You look it up. When did the Shots song come out? But anyways, we're going to talk about taking a shot. Part of two reasons. One, we were thinking about episode ideas, and Brandon, I was talking to Brandon about how I played in that 2-5 game down in Houston, which you can actually find you can see it on YouTube. It's up on YouTube.
Breaking news, Brandon's right, 2009.
That's pretty close. I was 29, so I wasn't technically 30 yet. But you can find Ken on the youtube.com/ParamountPoker, which is where all the Paramount Social Club RFID live table streamed footage is on that YouTube channel. But you can find me in the last two cash game setups, which is like, I don't know, April 3rd or something. It's pretty fun.
Did you play any big pots?
I did.
Big old pots?
I got mega crushed. Yeah, a couple of like 2K pots. I don't know how big. Okay. And then the game got much, much bigger because then I had a stack and then the guy, this guy, Ming, crazy gambling, like putting in chips blind, not looking into the river, just jamming bets the whole time and telling everybody, hey, I'm not going to look. I dare you. Play your cards kind of thing. It's kind of fun. He's nuts.
It's kind of fun.
And then I started to do it to him because I was starting to catch some cards. So that was good. And it wasn't working before that. So I was like, meh. My legitimate shot taking is not going well, so let's just do what I normally do and play like a doofus. And
maybe you got a shot.
Maybe I got a shot, which it did work out. I did end up a winner, barely.
Nice.
Like $80, but I was in for like $3,000, so that's a huge bonus.
Yeah, it's always nice when you get in kind of deep and then you just book like a small win and you just feel like you just crushed the game.
Yeah, it felt like I was up $3,000.
Yeah, like I love the days when I'm in for 5,000 and I leave with like 5,400 and I bailed all the way back, like much better than the days like I'm in for 1,000 and I got 2,000. And right. I go home a $1,000 winner. It feels much better to go home a $300 winner when you were down 4,500 at one point.
For sure. Yeah, like it feels great. Way better.
Right.
But taking a shot today. So the other thing we were talking about that got us to this episode idea is the fact that I'm very comfortable and used to playing 1-3. Like, no problem. And I'm just referring to the hold'em side of things. PLO, I'm much more comfortable playing bigger stakes. And is that a normal thing to be comfortable? PLO playing 2-5 or 5-5, I'm perfectly fine with. But when you take it two cards away from me and I'm playing...
I think it's just because you're so much more comfortable.
Playing Omaha versus hold'em.
Playing Omaha in general.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But anyways, like playing in this 2-5 game... where it was like a 2K max buy-in. So, I mean, it was a big 2-5 game. It wasn't like it was a lot of $10 straddles. So, I mean, ultimately, you're playing like 2-5-10. But,
yeah,
you know, I was not nervous for the sense, but like definitely playing differently than I normally do playing in that game. Because normally 1-3 game, like if I got a queen high flush draw, I'm in. Like, whatever. It's $300. I'll gamble. Yeah. But then it's like, hey, the same token playing 2-5, and it's like, it's $3,000. Ooh, Maybe my queen high flush doesn't sound so good anymore because one, I'm on the draw, and two, I'm drawing to the third nuts, and the board just paired on the turn, and I'm just, it's like, what am I, you know, I'm
holding it's for one of those things.
It's so different.
It is.
Is that normal? Is that something that players should think about?
Yeah.
Should you not think that way?
No, I think you definitely should. I think when you play higher stakes, I mean, in general, you play what? Better, right? You play more standard. You try to play the best version of your game, right? I mean, yeah, it's tighter, of course, but it's like, it's those things where you have a queen nine flush draw and you're supposed to be folding, but because it's only 300, you're calling, which is really bad when you're playing 1-3.
For sure. Oh, yeah. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that's what I'm comfortable doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But now that you move up, you realize, that's kind of probably
stupid.
Not right. And
it's
3,000, not 300.
It's far easier to fold.
Correct fold. Right. Which is probably the correct fold, but you know, when you're playing down, it's easier to make those mistakes because it doesn't cost you as much money. So it's like, you know, I might be a slight losing play here, but I came here to gamble, so I'll put in 300 and see what happens. The same token is, I think this is probably the wrong play. It's going to cost me 2 mortgage payments. I'll just fold.
Right. Far more likely to fold thinking, hey, I'll find a better spot. And I guess that's what I kept finding myself saying is this the spot I want to get my money in, or should I wait for a better one? The problem was, is that I was like, I think I went over the table with like 900. I had ran my, $300 stack up into like 1K, brought that 1K over to 2.5, which was probably on the smaller side, definitely one of the lower stacks. Like most people were buying in for hefty amounts, and then lost that. Bought him for 1,000 more, or topped off to 1,000 more when I got down to like 300, lost that. Then I lost ace king to aces and I flopped a king. I was just like, I don't fold here. I can't fold.
Yeah. Right?
Just lose your money.
You just lose.
Yeah, I just lose. And then I think I got in for another 1,800 after that one I went busted. So the last bullet was an $1,800 bullet. So I don't know. Technically, I guess I was in for 300, 1,018. How much is that?
31.
31. Yeah, I think I cashed out for like 3160 at the end of the night.
Feels good.
It does feel good. It felt amazing. But the whole beginning of my session, just not a lot of good cards. I found myself, and again, I'm asking these questions because you're the expert and I'm just the guy who just likes to play occasionally. I found myself calling raises with really poor hands only because with the full-blown intention of folding, like I'm just punting this $25 off, just because I felt like if I folded straight for 3 hours and then finally get a hand and then make a raise, like I'm not going to get any action.
Right. You gotta not
fake
fool them, but you gotta fake it a little bit. Right. Like you're actually splashing around when you're really not.
Yeah,
so
like
much.
I really don't want to play a multi-way pot, you know, or a heads up pot with 9-10 off, but like, shit, $25.
You call that 5 times and you lose all 5 times, you lose $125, but then you don't have the tight image. So when you get aces versus jacks and they give you a full double of 1,000,
right?
You know,
that was money you invested in your future. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
At least if that's what knowing, and there were times when I had like 9-10 suited, flop one of my suits in a 10 high board. It's like bet, 3-bet, and I fold. And I'm just like thinking to myself,
man, what am I doing?
Yeah, what am I doing? And then I'm remembering, oh, yeah, I'm not playing this hand to play this hand. I'm playing this hand to make sure that nobody gives me this super tight image so I don't get any action on my big cards. You got to give a little to get a little.
A little bit, yeah.
Man, it's like high school all over again.
It is. But I think that, you know, that brings up a good point where when you're shot taking, you don't want to be playing so high where you're playing almost bad the other way, where, you know, like
too
the
tight?
Money means so, yeah, not, yeah, so not so much too tight, but like, you know, when you do play 10-9 of hearts and you flop a 10 and 2 hearts, like you can't just chicken out and muck here because the money's big, or like, you know, you flop bottom set and, you know, looks kind of scary and you might get set over set here, but like, you can never fold. Like, you shouldn't be folding those hands just because the money means so much. I think that's when you've kind of...
Well, and it's funny that you
outshot taked your shot where you're just playing bad up here where it's... Because I've done that before.
That's just stupid. Well, it's funny because, like, ace-king suited. I had ace-king suited. I was, like, in middle position. I raised. 25 or something, because that was pretty much the standard opening bet was 25. Even if there was a straddle out there, like 25 was just, because again, the game's just playing bigger.
Open at 25. Yeah.
So it's open at 25. I get three bet from a guy who's definitely taking a shot. Like everybody nobody thinks that I'm taking a shot, even though I kind of am. Like I'm playing
That's good. That's
it's a good spot
want.
To be in, right? Everybody just feels like, Ken should. This is comfortable for him. Like he's not nervous about this at all. Even though deep down inside, I'm like, oh shit, this is the kind of a lot of money, and I don't really know how to play this game. Can we try Omaha? Omaha sounds good. Yeah,
and you're on TV too.
Oh yeah, and I'm on the right. So like I'm constantly checking the haircut and stuff. But anyways, I get three bet by under the gun, so he's got position on me, and you know I think he makes it like 80 or 90. Nobody else calls, come back to me. If we were playing 1-3. And the same scenario had come down. And again, I have him covered by about like 2-1, right? Like I've got like $1,000 in front of me. He's got maybe, I guess it's not 2-1. They probably had like 600. So almost 2-1, I guess.
Sure.
Where if like we were playing relative stacks where I had 400 or 500 on the 1-3 game, and that would make him have like 200.
250.
I would have snap all in. Like, don't even care. I'm not even thinking about the fact, does he have aces? Does he have kings? Does he have... I don't care. Like, I'm just going to snap. I'm all in. Like, I four bet there 100% of the time with ace king suited against that type of, like, scared, tight player. I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but, like, in my mind, that's what he was playing. Kind of timid. Is that tight passive? Passive tight? Tight passive, is that a thing?
Yeah, I mean tight passive. Yeah,
that's, I mean, exactly. Like I'm not nervous about this guy, and it's like, man, if he's got aces, whatever, I don't care. But because it was 2-5, I end up just calling there.
See to flop,
and full well knowing I'm either going to flop an ace or a king to bet it out. And I think I flopped a king. I bet it out. You know, pot size bet, whatever it was, $200. He goes all in. And then I'm like, fuck it. I have to call. Like, what? How do I fold a king high to a king high? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
You're not even playing. You shouldn't even play if you're folding that stuff.
Correct. I mean, there was never a thought process of folding there. But
You're in there.
I think the idea of the shot taking is my game changed tremendously. Now, I guess on the positive side, if I'd have whiffed the flop with ace king, I would have checked. He would have bet. I would have folded. And I would have saved myself all of the extra money for doubling him up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if inadvertently I played better because I was kind of playing differently by taking a shot. I guess that's what you were discussing earlier, right?
I mean, you're probably just playing like less, trying to reduce your variance a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is just a little more careful, and you can tiptoe around. It doesn't mean you're playing bad, but I mean, you're just playing less aggressive.
Yeah. I would have definitely been much more aggressive in a 1-2 game or a 1-3 game, whereas the old 2-5 game playing like 5-10. Got me a little bit there. No, I still ended up doubling the guy up, and it was fine. And I was like, eh, cooler, you know.
It's the same thing, you know, when I'm taking a shot in PLO, like in 1-2, well, I'll fist pump, get in double suited aces 4 or 5 ways, knowing I'm like, you know, whatever, 25% to 30%. Yeah. And it's, you know, you're printing money in the long run, and like, you know, you're 4 ways, so 25%, and you're 30%, like you got all that extra equity. And like, but again, you're only winning it 1 out of 3 times, 3 out of 10 times you're winning it. That means 7 out of 10 times you're losing it. Well, you're willing to take that shot for 500 all day, every day, because you know you're just going to be printing money in the long run at 1-2. But when you're playing 5-5-10, well, now you're sticking in 2,500 and it's a 10K pot. You're going to lose that 2,500 70% of the time, even though it's a correct play. You know, you think twice about it.
It's just, you know, because
especially when you only have two bullets. And,
you think,
you know,
differently of it.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily that it's bad. I mean, you can place, but I find myself tiptoeing around a little bit more. You know, I'm still going to take every spot that I think is a really good spot that comes up to me. You know, like when, you know, I three bet the aces and then it goes like all in, all in, all in. Like, I'm not going to fold them. But when it's the other way, when it's like I'm closing the action, I'm not going to pot them. I'm just going to call. You know, like, I'm not going to push the action myself. But if it comes, push comes to shove and they've shoved all on me, well, then, yeah, I'm not going to fold double suited aces because that's just stupid. But I mean, people will do it because, you know, they're just taking the risk adverse way about playing high stakes like that. And there's like, hey, you know, I'll find a better spot. Like, why do I need to gamble at 30% with aces four ways when I can just cooler guy, not flush for a second and flush and have it 100-0 later on? It's like, I get it. But then like, you're just passing up on spots. So that's kind of the, you know, the mindset. That's kind of the struggle with taking a shot is where are you like balancing yourself out? Like, you don't want to be just punting money and taking small edges, but at the same time, like, you don't want to pass up on profitable spots. Because, you know, the guy that's properly bankrolled for that game is going to take every one of those spots, which means in the long run, he's just going to crush you.
And I do want to go over that because I think that's kind of the next idea. Like, obviously, we're discussing what you and I are comfortable with and what our thoughts are on, you know, what to do when you're taking a shot, like how to play slightly. I think it's good for a couple different reasons. So I kind of want to talk about it more generically. Episode 9, which is still one of our most popular episodes, it's bankroll management variance and downswings. So obviously, listen to that one for bankroll management because I'm plugging my own show, our own show.
Nice.
That's a good one. I think you did a really good job on the idea.
Yeah, I think I actually like looked up some stuff for that one too, and like studied it a little bit. But
I kind of want to go over the idea of, you know, obviously your play is going to change, but at what point do you decide? Like, so many players want to take a shot, and I think that's just every poker player at some point in life has to take a shot. Like, you just do it, right? No matter where that is, it's just the next level up. Playing 1-2, it's 2-5. Playing 2-5 could be 5-5. Playing 5-5 could be 5-10. Whatever, it doesn't matter. 25-50. The stakes will go up increasingly, and everybody's comfortable at a certain level, and you can't get comfortable unless you start playing in those, you know, nosebleed sections, you know, more often than not. But what kind of bankroll are you looking at if you're a serious poker player and you're comfortable playing 1-2 and your bankroll is, you know, again, you can kind of ride out the downswings and beat the variance, so to speak, bankroll management wise. At what point do you decide, like, because I know so many poker players do this. They like play 1-2. They're pretty happy 1-2. They play for a little while. They're making some money. And then all of a sudden they're like, I'm going to go play 2-5. And then they just dump off all of their money that they have in their pocket to the point where they're walking around the room going, hey, can I get 500 Venmo? You got any five? Can I borrow 500? Can I get this? Can I borrow 1,000? Can I over here?
Yep. It's a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. And that's why bankroll is so important, because I can't tell you how many times I went busto before I figured out that, like, it's always going to end that way unless you properly manage it. But obviously that's for episode 9, but you know, you really need, for me taking a shot, it's always when like the games are going to be better. Like whenever the game I normally play in is going to be a great version of itself, that's when I would take a shot. Like when the circuit comes into the horseshoe, when you get out of town, people that are following that, when the games are just good, like you don't want to take a shot at on a Monday night at the horseshoe playing 2-5 for your first time ever. Like you're going to run into four regulars, maybe one drunk fish if you're lucky, and like a couple bad regs. It's like the game's obviously beatable, but it's not like you don't want to take a shot in those type of games. You want to take a shot when there's three super rich guys in town that are traveling the country playing, and you know, there's, that brings in two other big whales into the game because they're playing because those guys are in town and they want to gamble with them. And then you kind of sneak in there, and now all of a sudden the game's a great version of itself. That's kind of when you want to take a shot. I mean, that's when I've always taken my shots.
No, that makes sense. I mean, you got to pick and choose. I think arbitrarily just going, I'm just going to all of a sudden, like pulling a Mike. What's the dude's name from Rounders? Mike. Come on, Brandon. The hell's the guy's name?
I don't know.
Whatever, Mike. When Mike from Rounders is all of a sudden, he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go play the big game at the Taj against Johnny Chan, and just because I want to. It's because I want to see. Like, that never works out, right? And then he ends up going back to Teddy KGB's place. I'm giving you the whole plot line here. Then he goes back. This is all in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Then he comes back, and he's like, meh, now I'm going to play Teddy heads up in this big freaking game, and they get mollywopped. Like, he made a bad choice in playing up in stakes. He wasn't ready, did not have the bankroll management. You don't put – if you got a $10,000 bankroll, you don't put $10,000 into play on one session, right?
Nope.
How much of your actual bankroll, if you're good, let's put a number on it.
Oh yeah, that's good.
What's the number you're comfortable with? And again, it doesn't matter what it is because the stakes are all different. It's just relative to where you're normally playing. But let's say your bankroll is, you know, $10,000. how much of that $10,000
you're probably playing 1-2.
Okay. Wow.
We're going to stick hold them just because that's easy. And for sure. A lot. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, you would take, you know, if you're going to shot take, you know, like 10 to 20%, 20% being high of your bankroll for a shot take. So if you had $10,000, I mean, it'd be like $1,000 to $2,000. And if for you, that's four bullets of 500 at 2.5, then that's your shot take. If you want to, and now if the game's super crazy and there's a super whale playing 5.10, you got 2 1K barrels at 5.10. And that's like a real big shot take because you can win, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 that game if you run it off. So, I mean, that's kind of what I've always done, you know, 10 to 20%, 20% being kind of gambling.
Whatever your bankroll is, if it's 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000, when you do take the shot, you should really be never, you should never put in more than 10% of your bankroll. Otherwise, you could really just play yourself out, completely out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, 20% would be like a high if I got stuck in the game super good and I did $1,000 bullet and I so got cooler.
Kind of like taking two shots at once.
Kind of two shots at once. But that's only, you know, that's the maximum. Because, I mean, you got to figure if you're properly rolled, you're risking 1 to 3% of your 1 to 2% of your bankroll for every bullet that you fire. So you're just basically 10xing that and risking 10 to 20%. So, I mean, it's basically like a 10xer. You know, if you're risking 2% normally, you can risk 20% when you shot take.
That's interesting.
I mean, obviously, if you're risking 10% normally, then a shot take would be all of it because you're not properly bankroll managing from the start.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's all pretty much relative. But you never want to, you know, deplete yourself because, I mean, you are going to lose a lot of times. I mean, I can't tell you. A lot of times I've done the whole, oh, I'm going to play the circuit Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I crush the small game for 1,000 a night for 4,000. That's like, all right, well, it's Friday. Like, let's play 5-5-10, and then they're playing 5-5-10-25, and you rip 2 1K bullets, 2 2K bullets, yeah. And you're just out in an hour, and it's like, well, there's my whole week of profit. So, I mean, that's the way I usually shot take is I try and, like, you know, I know the circuit's going to be here for a week. I just like try and take what I'm quote unquote up after 4 days and then fire it in the big game. Kind of like how you got 300 up to 1,000. It's really nice to just stick your 1,000 into that big 2.5 game, knowing that you're only in for 300.
See what happens.
It's good mentality for, you know, not, oh, I have $10,000 in cash to my name in the poker bankroll. And then like sitting down and peeling off $5,100 bills. It's like, well, here's half of it.
Right.
You know, it feels a little different, but yeah, in general, 10 to 20%.
It's interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure people do more than that and then, you know, they go busto, but we're
literally
right. We're giving a show for you not to go busto, which is 10 to
trying 20%. To at least. I mean, that's the
goal.
Yeah,
trying to. But yeah, I mean, if you have $100,000 in your poker bankroll, yeah, I have no problem with you taking 10K and going to play whatever tank 2040 when the circuit's in town and trying to double up your bankroll. Cause I mean, the goal is, you know, you 5 or 10X your 10%. I mean, that's 50 to 100% of your bankroll. You can double up your bankroll if you have a really sick session, which is obviously the whole point of a shot take is to get a quick life double up going.
Yeah, because, I mean, once you take the shot, I mean, is the idea just to – how many times – let's make it this way, quantify this.
Yeah.
How many times do you have to take a shot before, like, deciding, that this is your new spot? Like, that's your new area? Like, I can only do it for golf, and, like, I know playing golf-wise, like – you know, at that point, I guess it doesn't really correlate because, like in golf, if you decide, like, I'm going to go from the men's tees to the championship tees, which are the further back tees, and it's another 10 to 20% longer golf course, which is a huge jump. I mean, you know, an extra 700 yards spread over the whole course is a lot. It's roughly seven football fields. But you'd hit roughly different clubs in and things of that nature. So, I mean, the whole game plays differently, different things come into play. But normally at that point, which I think is unlike poker, Poker, I feel like, is you take a shot, you go back to where you're comfortable, and then you take another shot in a shorter time period, and then you fall back to your comfort level. And then you just kind of keep taking little jabs. So all of a sudden, that little jab starts to become the normal, and maybe the bankroll is getting big enough where at that point you can just move up a level up, so to speak, and then now your new place of business is 2-5, and the next time you take a shot is going to be at 5-10.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just the bottom of, you know, your bankroll pretty much decides when you get to move up in the stakes. I mean, in a perfect world, if you're doing things perfectly.
Right.
If you're shot taking, you triple up your bankroll. Well, now you're this limit that you've been playing all week is no longer a shot take. It's just what your bankroll is suited for. And then, you know, that's just the dream of moving up the stakes, which, I mean, these days seems a lot harder than the internet days where you just keep clicking out of a table and moving up to the next table and clicking out of a table and moving up to the next table.
Yeah, the internet was the good old days.
Yeah.
Somebody did send me a...
The internet is how you can really not bankroll manage properly. Hold that thought on. Yeah, I mean, that the good thing about me taking, or, you know, a lot of people taking shots during the circuit is there's kind of like an ending. Like, everybody leaves on that Monday after the main event. So, you know, that 5-10-20 game isn't available anymore. So it's nice to be able to just like, oh, click the reset button. Oh, I tripled up my bankroll. Now I can go back to or reassess. And then they're going to come back in 8 more months. And you can shot take again, just maybe to step up. It's nice. Or when you're traveling too, you know, I'm going to go to Vegas or Houston or whatever. Here, I'm going to shot take there. I'm not going to sit and play the same game I have available anywhere.
Yeah, I always feel like for me, but I'm a different case. Like, I like the idea of playing, you know, away from the Chicagoland area where it's different. I can do some different stuff. And
yeah, you can be whoever you want to be.
Right. I can be the jackass. I can be the dummy. I can try to be a whale. I mean, you can pretend to be whatever you want. I feel like poker in general makes you a better actor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, like, sometimes you play things. Like, there's so many old guys, and I use this term in an endearing way. Like, you get a guy like Johnny Draws, and it was funny because I saw him do it at CCG at Warrenville. They're playing 1-3 in the back right corner right by the bar. He's sitting next to dealer in the one spot. I say hello to him. Hey, Draws, how are you? Yeah, good.
Yep.
When they let you out, you know, like he loves to say that same joke, and it's funny. But, of course, then he's playing in a thing, and he shows me his cards. He's on a draw, like a gut shot. And he bets it the whole way. Pretends to be like a tight old guy, and the kid folds face up, shows two pair, and he's like, I think you hit the flush in the river. And Draws just looks at me and then mucks his hand. I was like, he's got 5-high. He's got nothing. even a guy whose nickname is Johnny Draws, he's just like, meh, whatever. He's playing the, everybody assumes he's a tight old guy, even though if you actually play with him, you would know. But
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you play it to a T, and it's like you play your part and you try to exploit it. I mean, you and I have talked about that as well. I don't remember what episode that was. That was another good episode. Something. Poker stereotypes, maybe? I think that was a thing. Yeah, Poker Culture 101, stereotypes, language. All right, so basically what you need to do is go back and listen to episodes 9, 10, and 11, and 12. Holy shit, these are great episodes. This is the hot streak we hit. Episode 9, bankroll management. Episode 10, stereotypes, language, and the unwritten rules of poker, which many people need to listen to. 11, how to exploit players on the bubble. People are not doing that enough. 12 is learning ICM theory. I still don't know how to do that. I personally listened to that one twice. I have an ICM app on my phone. I still don't know if it's right.
That's funny. Yeah, then we ran out of stuff to talk about. That was
Then it goes back to we don't know what the hell we're doing.
So we'll just talk about COVID.
Episode 13. How could you lose $800 throwing a Gatorade bottle? Let Ken tell you that story. It's 45 minutes long. It's worth it, though. Mixing it up with mixed games. I like that one, too.
I like that one, too.
Yep. Pat the Nits in here. I was doing some interviews. That was a good one. I got Sarah from Poker Power. That's that the female club, which getting a bunch of ladies playing poker together. Another stereotype that if women can play, like, loose aggressive poker but appear that they're playing kind of passive tight poker, like, they could write their own checks in tournaments and cash games. It's unbelievable. It's kind of not fair.
It's like Jill, you know. I hate the outer, but
yeah, no, and we won't say her last name, but Jill is a force. She's good. She knows how to play that card. She knows when guys are underestimating her, and she uses it to her advantage. And that's, I think that's
we talked about it when she was on a final table and when we were doing the commentary, and I like, you know, everyone just thinks she should have ace nine here, but she's got the deuce four suited.
Well, and not to go on the other side, and I don't know how the hell we ended up talking about, you know, player stereotypes, but I think it's something to think about when you're deciding to take a shot, because when you take a shot, you're a rookie in the sense of nobody knows who you are. So you got to be aware of what image of my am I portraying. If everybody knows that you're the scared guy or girl that is trying to take a shot, your shot taken on this one, and they know it, they're going to push you around, and they're going to use that to their advantage. What?
Yeah. So you're going to get rolled over.
Right. So you got to be aware of these things. But like on the flip side, you know, a player like Pat the Knit, obviously he's a knit. That's his name, Pat the Knit. He just plays very, very good cards. Well, then when they're playing the seven deuce game, I was looking at some old YouTube videos. And this was like a 2-5 game that we had recorded at the Max, and Pat played, and they were doing the seven deuce game. If you win with seven deuce, everybody pays you $20. And then like the guy who last folds owes 3 times the bet, which I think is an interesting prop bet, which is also a great episode, which is episode. Let's see how many plugs I can bump here. Damn it. I don't know where that one is. Anyways, there's a prop one too. It's like episode 9, 8, 7, 6. Oh, 13.
It's one of the first 20.
That was 13. Okay, so 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 was the sweet spot of our poker podcast. So if you're only going to listen to a few episodes, it's 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Re-listen to those because prop bets are fantastic. But anyways, I'm doing the RFID table and I see Pat's got seven deuce and he's like in under the gun. Like he couldn't be in a better position. Of course, there's like one bet. He raises. Everybody folds to him. The guy who originally bet had like ace jack suited, folds to Pat because he's like, I don't want to play ace jack suited against a guy who's notorious for having really good cards. My ace jack is probably no good when he's three betting. Like his three bet range, ace jack does not beat. So he folds. Loses the $40 bet that he put out there. Plus, he owes another $60 to the seven deuce prop bet. And Pat wins a fatty pot and just like he shows it. It's like, God, like, could he have not used his image any better than that?
He
exact
knows it's
going to
work. Like,
yeah, he knows it's
going to
work. It's like free money. It's kind of not fair. Kind of not fair.
It isn't, because when the maniac has seven deuce, it's not even the same.
No. No, you're going to play a whole pot all the way out.
You're going to play a whole pot, and you're going to have to hope they miss their draw.
I mean, you might get 4-bet by a guy with ace-jack suited if it's like Greek John, where like you just give him no respect whatsoever. However,
he's probably got
he uses his advantages 100% to get paid off on hands by being aware of what other people's image is of you. It's difficult to say and get out, but you guys know what I mean. Right, Brandon?
I agree.
Sometimes I don't know if you're still there, if you like.
Well, I said, I feel like you don't ever listen to me when I.
What?
That was funny.
Yeah, I liked it. Do you like that one?
Not really.
Let's see how long we can not talk for on the podcast. Welcome to episode 45 and a half. Silence from Ken and Brandon.
I don't really have much else on the shot taking front.
No, I think you have to be aware of your bankroll. You got to be aware of your table image because you can kind of create whatever persona you want to be. So dress the part. Like you want to play
and
like
actually
a hipster
pick
doofus.
Your actual spots. Like, you know, if you sit down for an hour and the game just sucks, it's like you can just go home and try again later. Like you don't have to force it.
Like, I'm a forcer because I don't
I know you are.
I don't go all the time. So I feel like when
so
I'm
when
there,
you go,
I have
you're
to force
going.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. But
I have like 25 tabs open on my browser and I'm so pissed because I don't know what any of them are. And they're so minuscule at this point. Like all I can see are like little icons and it sucks. I'm trying to find something. I can't find it.
Yeah, that's
I took a shot with browser surfing and I failed. Anyways, episode 45. Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. We're not on any other social media. More
you know, I'm off
I
all social media between TikTok.
Oh, TikTok's so good. We should.
And here's what I found.
I might get an overlay TikTok just so you can do it.
deleted Instagram, deleted Facebook,
really?
Deleted Snapchat. I still have Twitter just because I use it for news. I don't really ever post anything, but I like fancy baseball and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Political news. Twitter is just great. Twitter is my news consumption, my media consumption. And then, you know, I got TikTok and I found that all that really happened was the 7 hours a week I spent on Instagram and Facebook turned into 9 additional hours of TikTok. So my social media consumption actually went up, but it's all on one app now.
Right. It's just in the same spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Because, yeah, we need to make a TikTok.
I think we might. I think we might. I think it's good. Thank you, as always, to everyone. In all honesty, our fans in Houston and the fans in Chicago, thank you so much for listening. The overlay itself is up to, currently, as of right now, February. Nope, it's not
February. February.
Try that again.
Wow.
April 13th of 2021, which is weird to say. Basically one year and like 2 weeks. We're at 7,629 downloads. That's crazy to me. Like, it's awesome that it's kind of, you know, become a thing of its own. And I think it's interesting for two guys, one of them who's serious about playing, the other one who's not. We make a good team, Brandon.
I mean, yeah, it's great. We basically just record our phone calls.
Yeah, this is what we always talk about when I bitch about my shot taking in Houston. There's far more swearing and a lot more dirty analogies. So maybe I'll start including those. I did tell a story at the poker table in Houston at the one. They play 1-2, but it's like 50 to 500. Like, it's bananas down there. Wait, Brandon's going to make a trip to Houston with me, I think.
In May.
In 2 weeks. So yeah. I will bring the podcasting equipment. We will 100% do one from Paramount Social. So you guys get to meet Brando, playing some games with them. It'll be super fun. But like, dude, they're nuts. And I end up telling, Mark likes to play like 80s rock during the day. And then when Dave gets there at night, he switches to like rap. It's awesome. Like, it's the most weird switch at like 9:30. Whenever Mark goes home, they instantly turn on.
The vibe just switches.
Yeah, and it's like easy E, like old school, really great rap music or hip hop, whatever the hell it's called. But like, people are super into it. And like, I was playing with this like 80-year-old guy. I don't know how. I mean, he's an older guy. I mean, he makes draws look young. And dude, he was even jamming to it. I thought for sure he'd be like, turn this garbage off. Nah, he was super into it. It was awesome. And then during the 80s rock classic side, I was telling some story about the song and how I took some girl into the locker bank at a middle school dance. And I was like, forever and always, this song will remind me of such and such in the locker bank. And boom, bing, boom, just like this hand, that one really played off for me too. So it was great. And then everybody thought it was super funny. And then I squeezed off a huge bluff. I had nothing.
Nice.
I whiffed. Nice. I had like 7-8 of hearts, flopped an open ender, turned a flush draw, and just bricked city on the river. But again, if you try and bet enough, at some point, people will just fold.
They can't always call.
They can't always call. And it was against the older gentleman that folded. He got pissed and ripped over his two pair. He's like, I think you got there. And I was like, no, I didn't. I was drawn to the sucker end of the straight. Shitty flush draw. All I had left was a massive bluff. But I thought about it, and I actively was like, I'm going to just keep betting, and then that way it will look less like a bluff on the river. Like, maybe it'll seem like I flopped a set here or something. Because, like,
that's what I was going to say.
He raised, like I bet, I checked, and then I check raised him on the flop, and then I just banged it on the turn and banged it on the river like I had sevens or whatever it was, or sixes, and he believed me. So it worked out well. Anyways, thank you for listening. Follow us on Twitter at The Overlay Pod. Make sure you check us out at the next CCG event. If you're listening to this today, Friday. Oh, it's tax day, April 15th. That's when this comes out. Tax day.
Nice.
Yeah, sucks. Nobody likes tax day. It is also Titan Day 1.
Titan Weekend. Day
Titan
2, right?
Weekend. Huge Titan Weekend. I think it's going to be good. I think this might be one of your better thought processes. Doing the Titan non-CSOP weekends or non-CSOP event kind of thing, but also doing it at a spot that people aren't crazy about. Like, this gives people a reason to go up to Lake Forest. So if you're listening to this on Friday, you still got one more day to check it out on Saturday. That will be the probably busiest flights. but you could stay at the hotel for like $80 a night if you do make it. I'm going to televise, live stream the final table of the Titan tournament on CCG Poker TV. And other than that, should be a dope ass weekend.
Yeah. I mean, you got 12 day one flights, 12 flights.
And on the side note, we already did the Paramount YouTube plug, but they're crushing it right now. They're doing like three tournament final tables a week and a cash game. So the cash game's gross. 5-5. It's sick. It's so good. Such a juicy game.
Can't wait to lose 7,000.
We'll play it for sure. Thanks for listening, everybody. Brandon, lead us out of here.
Farewell, all.
See you, everybody. Farewell. Good luck taking your shot. And if you bust, let us know. Can always be a volunteer dealer. Thanks, everybody. Bye.